Hey, welcome to The Interactive Journey. Come along with us as we share the stories of parents, children, and professionals navigating a challenging world of various diagnoses, life transitions, and being human.
Welcome to The Interactive Journey, and what a journey it has been to be here with our esteemed guest. My name is Rachel Watson, and I am here with your beloved host, Logan McIntosh.
Hi.
I can say your last name.
I was like, was that four syllables or?
Logan Apple and Megan Schakowsky.
Hello.
It's currently the month of March, which is National Disabilities Month, Social Work Month, woo-hoo, and Women's Month.
And hey.
Hi.
And some of us are all of those.
And what better way to shed more light on the special needs community than to chat with a woman who is a social worker?
Yes, good morning.
We are here on location at Castle Camden with Caitlin Van Wagner. She is the Assistant Director of Program Operations. Thank you so much for taking the time to chat with us today and for welcoming us to Castle.
Yes, thank you. We're excited to have you here so you can learn a little bit more about us and all the things that we do here for just the children in Camden and beyond, which we've already talked about.
Well, so what's really nice about being on location is we can see the place that people work every day and where they exist. So we got a nice tour before we started. And the setting really could be quite clinical and sterile and, you know, like that antiseptic kind of look. And it isn't. You guys have really transformed it. In the room we're in now, there's probably about 10 pictures around the room that have been, I would imagine, created by people who come here.
Yes, I can say that I did not paint any of these, but these are some of the artwork that we've, you know, taken from the children who've either left them by accident but have used in our art therapy room, and then use it to just, like, you know, brighten up the space a little bit. This is where we'll have, like, some of our clinical intakes happen on this floor.
Wonderful. So let's get started. Tell us a little bit about yourself. Everyone's favorite question. Okay, think about it. Like, how did you get here? Like, what led you to having this job or working in this field?
Mm-hmm. I definitely feel very fortunate to have found this job. I have worked here for almost 9 years. I was a new graduate of, like, my grad school from Rutgers University. It took about a year to get a job. Nobody wants to hire anyone with, like, no experience. So I feel super fortunate to have landed here. And I was like, oh, I'm just going to stay somewhere 2 years, get my hours, and then I never left. Just because of the mission and just, like, the driving force behind always being so focused on the kids and the community, that's something that is so important to me. It's not really about all the other extra stuff. It's just, do I believe in what we're doing, all the work that we put in here, making it fun, engaging, therapeutic. So that's kind of how I landed here, how I've stayed here. I feel like I've just kind of grown up here, and it's just, like, a great place to work. I think the consistent thing is everyone's here for the right reasons, just like the Bachelor and Bachelorette. But we're all here for the right reasons.
Well, what kind of reasons would you say they are? Or, you know, since we're all here for the same reason, what kind of reasons are people here for?
I would say even when I'm doing interviews, it's just, doesn't matter how amazing you are, or, like, what skill sets you have. If that vibe is there of, like, I'm not here for the kids, or, like, oh, I can kind of get through any tough day just because I know I'm here for the kids, and I'm, you know, every day it's not going to be great, but we're here for the kids, here for the kids, here for the kids. And I'm like, I'll hire you in a second, even if you have no experience, anything. And that's literally every person here. Like, that's the consistent thing that we're bringing on to the team. I say, I can teach you how to run a group. I can teach you how to do this, but I can't teach you how to be helpful. I can't teach you how to be support. I can't teach character qualities right, that are what we're looking for. But I can build you up in other ways from, like, mentoring and coaching. Mm-hmm. But if you don't have those skill sets, have, yeah.
Right. Well, it's really interesting to hear that, because I also do a lot of interviewing, and I know you do too, yeah. Logan, Rachel, you have forever done interviewing, and the best risk that I've ever taken, I take, is on those characters, mm-hmm, those character traits. When I hire someone, and I kind of like, oh, they have, like, every qualification that they should be able to do an excellent job. They've had lots of experience, but when you have those, don't have those interpersonal skills, and I'm not speaking for this program or anything, I'm speaking for myself and my experiences, it tends to not work out. And it's like, oh, I should have trusted my gut. Mm-hmm. Should have trusted, there's something, and for lack of a better way to describe it, it's like trusting your gut with it.
And Caitlin, you were kind enough to give us a tour of the program here, and I happened to notice that you are wearing gorgeous high heels.
Yes.
But my gut, and I know I'm right, you will run if down these hallways to chase the child if you need to, if you need to do something to keep a child safe, or those shoes are coming off. You can totally tell.
Oh, no,
that
I run.
Is,
I
that
run.
Is absolutely the vibe that you give off and who you are.
Yes, security watches us frequently for laughs about us. Yes, I was told yesterday that security was watching us in the hallway, you know, de-escalating situations. And that's what makes, I think, working in Camden in this small hospital, just like this community that we've built. But they're like, I saw you guys doing that. And they're like, you guys are amazing. You guys are great. But yeah, I'll run. I've chased a kid out of this parking lot all the way at the end of the parking lot. I had to, yes. We have to intervene.
Absolutely, yes. And you look good doing it with those heels.
It's the least I could do.
I'd be flat on my face in about 2 seconds. That's why I have to wear flats. I'm going to be chasing. Yeah. So before I even ask you to describe what CASEL is, first, can you describe what CASEL stands for?
Yes, I can, because it does stand for something. Yes. You guys did your Googling. So it stands for Children Achieving Success Through Therapeutic Life Experiences. So that is something where we're trying to mimic like real world situations. We're trying to mimic that school environment in here in this very controlled and emotionally safe and supportive environment, but getting them ready and prepared for life because it's going to come even if you're not ready for it.
Mm-hmm. So describe what CASEL itself is. Now we know what the acronym is. What kind of things do you do here?
So we are a children's partial hospitalization program. So that is one level below residential. So our children are still able to function in their community, within their home, within their school, but they're having pretty significant distress. So we have two different locations. We have one in Camden, which is our original, and then Berlin location opened up, I would say, about 5 years ago because they saw the need in the Berlin area for services there. So in our Camden location, we have three different levels of care. So our highest and most intense level of care is PHP. So that is our partial hospitalization level of care. And that means, like I said, one step down from residential. We're mostly getting our referrals from school. So all of these kids are the ones who are probably labeled as bad. I don't believe in that, but schools definitely at times believe in a label like that. As kids who are getting suspensions, detentions, kicked out of class, just kind of labeled as like lazy, you're not learning, you don't want to be here. And everyone's here, comes here for a different reason. I would say most of our referrals are from school. We coordinate a lot with CMO since we just actively work really hard to stay relevant in the community. So doing lots of outreach and really connecting with people so that they know, hey, we exist and we're here to help. Through no financial gains of our own, but to be able to do that. And then we have our after-school program. So the kids who are functioning a lot better in school, maybe having some trouble at home, they can come to our after-school program where they'll have a shorter version of our day program. So they'll still have therapeutic groups. They'll still be able to have some time to do their homework, their check-ins, but really just creating that like therapeutic environment after school and staying. We stay very close in contact with their teachers to be able to say like, all right, is there anything that you guys need at school that we can help out with? Still offering family sessions to be able to work with the families on their like parenting skills. And then we have our outpatient program, which I would say is probably over 500 families that are connected, and that can be from ages 3 to 18. And then if there's like DDD, can go up to 21 to be able to offer like that service in the community. But really just providing that like therapeutic environment, I would say in our partial setting is where it's our most fast-paced. So it's very busy, very loud. But the kids are having daily group therapy. We have our teachers come in through Brookfield Academy providing academic work. But really, it is a space where even our 3-year-olds or our 15-year-olds, and we're having and facilitating therapeutic groups, and we're just kind of changing and adjusting our topics based on the need. But you know, really just trying to get them prepared to return to their community. This is a short-term program. Day program maybe lasts about... I would say like 8 to 12 weeks. IOP can last a little bit longer because we're not pulling them from school. So that can last maybe about 12 to 15 weeks. Our therapeutic nursery can last from 3 to 6 months. And outpatient can go up to 18. So it really is about being that space in the community. Like I've seen kids grow up here. Mm-hmm. You know, we have children where I'm like, I remember you when you were 7. You know, when you were little here the last time, and it's, you know, kids can return. We definitely have children who will return. Sometimes their parents weren't ready to participate. Sometimes the children was just in a different space, and then they come back, and that's where we always just have that open door of like, look, if this is too much for you right now, you got a lot going on. All right, we're going to send you back to school. Here's some supports. Just come back to us when you're ready. And then in Berlin, they have, because they are functioning at a much smaller program, they have 3 partial care rooms. So I think they can have probably around 30 patients on a day-to-day basis. And then they have an outpatient that they continue to expand because there is such a need for outpatient services in that area. So they don't have an IOP or a nursery.
So 2 things I was thinking of. What are the ages? Mm-hmm. What's your age range that you serve?
So in our therapeutic nursery, it is from 3 to 4 years old. In our day program, that ranges from 5 to 15. And then outpatient is from 3 to 18. And like I said, for DDD, it can go up to 21. And then in our IOP, it's from 5 to 12. Anything after 12 is like they don't really want to engage in treatment after school. So that's why we kind of have like a 12-year-old is when they're still like actively wanting to participate in treatment. Because especially in an after-school setting, it's a long day. So we want to make sure the kids want to be here and that this is really good for them and keeping them connected to like that therapeutic value. And then in Berlin, it goes from 5 to 12.
Okay. A little more narrowly focused. Mm-hmm. Okay. So and then my other question was your outpatient services. Can you describe to our listeners what kind of outpatient services?
Yeah, so all of our outpatient therapists, they have recently received a training for like trauma-focused CBT. So they're all certified in trauma-focused CBT. And so I think right now in our Camden outpatient, we have like 6 therapists that are working that their caseloads can range from like 80 to 100 patients that they're keeping on their caseload. So they might see a patient weekly for individual therapy. Maybe 2 weeks later, they might meet for family therapy. And then we also have our APNs who are doing medication management sessions. So really just staying connected to like that level of care. But we created the outpatient program a few years after opening Castle, almost 25 years ago, because we saw when we would refer out, all the referrals get lost. This gets dropped. They didn't. So we're like, all right, we need to create our own outpatient program. So we are connected where I can just send an email and send my referral right to the person. And I can check the chart to make sure it's been scheduled and following up in that way. Just really guaranteeing that like continuity of care is so important. And really just trying to minimize barriers for people because it's hard to ask for help. It's hard to do that. So we want to make it so it's like, yep, this is easy. We had our last session. Tomorrow you're getting a phone call. You're scheduling your intake outpatient, and I'm going to walk you and show you where you're going to go for your appointment and really just kind of bridging that gap.
That's great. So you talked about referrals from school districts is mm-hmm. one place you receive referrals. Where else do you receive referrals?
I would say we receive most of them from school, but we also work very closely with CMO because New Jersey CMO is very helpful, but there's a lot of people that don't know that we exist. So going to a lot of community events, where we'll like have a table letting people know what our services are or just attending and being like, hey, here's our business card. If you've got patients, like children who need services. So we do there. Pediatricians that we work with or that, who are like, ooh, this is kind of outside of my scope of practice. Like, but here's a mental health facility. So we work really closely, I'd say, with like CMOs, doctor's offices, school.
So what about parent involvement? Can you talk a little bit about the importance of parent involvement and how do parents participate? Like, what's their role in this whole process?
Yeah, it is such an integral role because we're working with children. You know, this is a voluntary program, and so we're very vocal. Like, look, this is voluntary. You're not mandated to be here. It's really for people. You want to be here and participate. And I let parents know, like, we're going to ask a lot of you because I'm going to ask you to divulge your family health history, your parenting style. I'm going to ask you to be open with me while I give you feedback and differences and changes and really ask you to do a lot. Mm-hmm. So parent involvement is absolutely integral. It's a mandatory part of our treatment. So to be able to participate in the program, you have to be engaged in the program. Because we can see a 5-year-old doesn't have that capacity to make these changes by themselves. They might be able to do it here because we're so focused and continuing to reiterate and go over and just be very repetitive. But if it's not being reinforced at home or reinforced in different ways through the parenting and through the guardians, it's not really going to stick. So it definitely is very important. And I, you know, I'm very vocal with parents of like, look, I'm asking a lot of you. I know that. And if this is too much for you right now, let's talk about what other things going on in your life or how we can best support you in a different way, like very non-judgmental. Mm-hmm. But, you know, we're here for the families in Camden, I think, are facing a lot of different things than families in Berlin or families in Willingboro, in different areas, mm-hmm. Cherry Hill. It's just a different way of life here that we're working, and the basis of social work is meeting people where they're at, and that's what we're doing and finding those positives. And all right, you're here. You showed up today. That's a win. Even if everything else is kind of, you showed up, and how can we build off that? And also you're building up the parents, because usually they're here because they're like, I don't know what to do. I don't know how to help my child. And that's a scary place to be as a parent.
It is, because I know even myself as a parent, there are times that I'm not sure what to do, and I work in this field. And so I think about that often. If I work in this field and I still have questions and I doubt myself, what about parents who have no experience and then they happen to have a child who, for whatever reason, may have additional needs that they weren't prepared for when they signed up to be a parent? So that can be, you know, pretty daunting to some people. What are some things that you would like parents to know that maybe isn't on your website or in your brochure?
I think the space that we create is the most important. I know anytime a child comes here, they're like, oh my God, I'm so nervous. I'm so this, I'm so that. It's like a new thing. I was like, yeah, we're all nervous on our first day of school or first day of a new job. But I think the space of how much that the people work here care and are here for their child. You hear horror stories about maybe a place that might sound similar or has children with quote behavioral issues, and kind of the thoughts that go on. And it's just like the Castle program in Berlin and Canada, it's not anywhere near like that. It's really a space that is based on like emotional support and safety because of the people that we're hiring and the people that we have on staff. They're all here for the children. They're all here because they have a passion for helping people and having those same mission and values and really being connected to that goal. So I think that's the most important thing, is that you're having a space where your child is appreciated exactly for who they are, even if they do have maybe a not so nice label at school. Is we're working on kind of, I can't take that away, I can't take their experience away, but working on building up their self-esteem so that then when they go, they have these little things of like these moments of like, yeah, you know what, maybe I am smart, or maybe I am like someone that's important to know. And I think that's really like the welcoming environment, I think, is so important. It's something that everybody does just like such an amazing job at.
When we were welcomed here into the building, the very kind security guard asked us to put some masks on still coming around, which made me think of COVID. How has COVID impacted what you do?
COVID has, I think, really, you got to look at it in the bright side, right? You really had to push us to see like our service delivery differently. With COVID, we had to go remote. Like most places. So for about 3 months, we had to close our on-site services, and we were able to meet with those families, and we met with them in almost like an outpatient setting, but we met them remotely from our homes. So all the therapists, we maintained a caseload and we met, but you know, the therapy is very different because we're all going through this collective global trauma. And it was just like, do you have food? Do you have money? Do you have that? So our therapeutic services were very different as we're humans first, you know, outside of being therapists as well. Like we're all going through it too. So that was very different. And honestly, after 3 months when the kids came back, I think the children that we saw were different. Like even just in 3 months, the kids that we were serving were so different. Because at some point we were seeing in the beginning, I think, an excitement just to be around people. So it was like about working on our social skills on this and getting them just back into structure. Mm-hmm. So kind of children who have been glued to their moms or dads or grandma's side have not been told no in 3 months. Mm-hmm. They're real relearning like, no, you have to follow a direction, or you can't sleep until 11 a.m. You have to have all these structures.
Welcome back.
Yeah, this is actually what real world looks like.
Right.
So we were having that very much in the beginning, but we've also had to change and address, like with our staff and providing additional education, because I think the influx in teenage suicidal ideation, teenage gender identity issues, and being open and vocal about that, but also typically the depression and anxiety that goes along with going through that, we've really had to push ourselves in the education that we've provided our staff. So changing for that, but we've seen a huge influx in inpatient referrals, suicidal ideation, and, you know, need it. I think pre-COVID, we were so used to hyperactivity, ADHD, and maybe anger and aggression as like our most main referral, especially when we're working with our adolescents. But post-COVID, I would say it's depression is really, so that changes how you're running groups and what groups you're running. You're not focusing on like anger management. These kids can barely get out of bed. These kids are here and they're feeling worthless and they can't even say one nice thing about themselves. And then that's their therapeutic goal. I need you to say something positive about yourself. And they can't. So really like working with our staff and educating them on how to work with a group of kids who aren't lifting their heads up, who don't want to engage, who don't want to participate, but they came today. So that's a win. You got up, you look like you showered, and being able to kind of do that. So I think those kind of like education spaces is how we've changed. And then also really seeing that need of we have to get kids in fast. We can't have a 4-month wait list for kids mm-hmm. who are being removed from a hospital setting for attempted suicide. So we've really had to, a part of the room that we're in, is we've created a position for like a clinical intake coordinator. So we have one person who does our intakes and we can get them in, and our goal is to have them in and starting within 30 days. So we've gotten really creative in, we call it like a bucket list. So, you know, a room can be capped at 10, but every room has 2 additional patients who have had their appointment already complete. So that if one person leaves unexpectedly, the next day that other child can start. Okay. So really pushing ourselves to meet the needs that are here, because we have to be able to say, you're telling me you've got a parent crying and saying, I need help. I got to find a way to help. We just had to push ourselves to like think differently. So we've really been a very concerted effort to get these kids in and get them in for services, because people can't wait.
Right. Yeah.
That's awesome. Having spent some time working in the schools pre-COVID, I can recall many, many instances working with the schools, primarily the child study team. And one of the questions that was always asked was, what's the Castle wait list? Mm-hmm. Where are we? You know, and it would be like 1 month, 2 months, or guess what? Castle doesn't have a wait list. We can call them right now.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And that's, even sometimes we'll have people on the wait list and we'll just check in with them. Hey, where are you? Do you still want services? Needing to check in? Is your child potty trained? Where are we at? And needing to just touch base and let them know, like, hey, we didn't forget about you. You're here. But, you know, when parents are calling us, they're usually not like, oh, things are starting to go down. I'm desperate and I need help. And you don't want to say, sorry, I've got about a 12-week wait list. You're like 15th on the – people can't hear that. They don't want to hear it. And so we just said we need to be different. We've got to figure out a new way to do this.
This isn't a product. This is a service mm-hmm. that is, you know, so important to get in everybody's right. hands.
Mm-hmm.
And it's hard because there aren't enough clinicians out there sometimes to, or you can't get them in. I'm not saying your company, but I'm just your situation. I just know in general, in the field, it's hard to get highly trained people in and ready to go to meet those needs. So the fact that you're able to do that and maintain that is pretty amazing.
Mm-hmm.
And it probably motivates a little bit the turnaround to like, okay, this person's ready to go. Let's move them out to back to their typical environment. Let's get somebody so we can get somebody else in.
Mm-hmm.
So keeping that door or that flow going.
Our therapists work very closely with our clinical supervisors, with our intake coordinator to say like, all right, here's our improvement. Here's where the parents are. Here's where the school is. And I know we do a lot of like coordination with the school and really trying to prepare them and educate them on our services. Mm-hmm. And that's where I'll say like, I'll be in and I'm transitioning my patient out and they might be like, what's your wait list for an 8-year-old? And so I'm like, all right, let me coordinate with our intake coordinator. I'm going to let you know, here's her contact and I'm going to forward you to her so that you can get that child on wait list. So that's where it's kind of like those wraparound, like building relationships with people, but the schools have so much turnaround. So you have to constantly be educating them on our services. So like every year or every quarter, you've got to go to all of the Camden schools, be like, hey, remember us? We're here.
Oh, that's great.
Yeah.
Yeah. So that's on the way in. Now talk about the way out, how, like, when it's time to be discharged from your program and return to the school setting, for example, what does that look like? How do you do that?
So as one of the supervisors and who started as a therapist here, in the beginning, school's so important. That's where most of the children's stressors are. And it's hard to be a kid now with all of social media, with I don't know, just how callous I think some like youths can be. Mm-hmm. It's a hard space. So it really is so important for a school to feel supported by Castle, because also a good reputation or a bad reputation can really change. And really needing to cultivate those relationships. So in the beginning of treatment, I always say to, you know, my supervisees, within the first 2 weeks of treatment, you're calling school, you're reaching out to guidance counselors, you're talking to teachers, because a parent says, oh, this is the problem. But what does the school say? I've had schools be like, there's no issues at school. And we're like, oh, that's not what the parent said. Let's figure out this disconnect. So it's communicating with the school in the beginning, the middle, and the end. So usually in the middle, it's like, hey, here's our treatment. Here's where we're thinking. They're doing well in this goal. We're still working on this goal. So working really closely with the guidance counselors and then trusting them to disseminate that information. Because our therapists can have a caseload up to 10. So that's a lot of schools and a lot of communication to go around. And having those quality conversations take a while. And then at minimum, it's 3 weeks prior to discharge. You're reaching out to the school. You're communicating with them. Here's our expected discharge date. Here's our plan. Let's discuss, is there any supports that we can have and mimic that we do here? So usually at the end of their stay, you know, we're sending home discharge instructions. And also like a, we call a school communication form. What's a patient's triggers? What are some helpful coping strategies? And trying to recreate things that can be done in school. We don't want to create things that are like, okay, you get a 30-minute break every 10 minutes. That's not really feasible in an academic setting. But really trying to offer them tools. And then I'm always like, here is something, how we utilize our behavior modification system. Here's how our staff engage with the patients. So we use the Nurture Heart approach. Here's some tools. Here's some skill sets. Here's a website that you can use if you would like to learn a little bit more. Because a lot of times parents, even if a child has not had any medication or anything like, quote, magical, but they come here and they do well, and it's like, okay, here's how we talk to children. Here's how I view behavior. Here's how I do, here's how we do this here at Castle. And sometimes that's it, is just things like that. So really staying connected and trying to give school as much education as possible, even just like, because they can be guidance counselors, but I'm sending information on how anxiety can look like defiance. So instead of saying, this is a kid who's ignoring me, it's like, oh, actually, maybe they're anxious, and maybe I have to approach things in a different way. So just trying to build up the teachers, too, because I want them to kind of shed their preconceived notions of the child that left might not be the same child that comes back, but they have to be open to it.
Right. And that can be hard.
It's very hard. That's why I try to be very supportive to our teachers.
Because as optimistic as we can be, sometimes teachers aren't ready to let that go.
Yeah. So I think their workloads can be impossible
right.
as
yes,
well.
Yes, right. Very tough. I mean, and this is one child in a classroom full of...
I would say 25 is so. Around, yeah. I feel like, a school right. pretty normally.
Mm-hmm. Caitlin, you mentioned the Nurtured Heart approach. Can you talk a little bit about that?
Mm-hmm. So I would say, again... COVID with my time frames is so bad. I don't know when anything happened. It was definitely pre-COVID. I would say maybe like a year or two if I could guess. We got grant funding for sending staff to become certified Nurtured Heart trainers. So myself and then three other staff went. So we spent 1 week in East Orange getting trained by the creator of the Nurtured Heart approach with the goal of bringing it back and just doing a culture shift of here at Castle. So the Nurtured Heart approach, if I could give it in just like a very quick blurb, it is the focus of how you view behaviors, and it's about changing that relationship with a child. So it can be in an individual basis in schools. It's kind of, at first it was created to work with, quote, they use the word intensity. So it's not negative or positive. It's just an intense child. And intensity can be used in positive ways and in negative ways. So it's not inherently a bad thing. So it's about working in how we view behaviors. So it really is focusing on, like, when I'm teaching staff or teaching new people, I am inherently not engaging with negative behaviors. I am so focused on not giving them my relationship, because what a child is looking for is they're looking for me. They're looking for my reaction. Is it easier to get Miss Caitlin when I'm tapping on this, when I'm flipping a chair, when I'm doing that? It's easier to get her and pay attention to her, have her pay attention to me. So if I turn that part of my brain off where, you know, outside of safety risks, I'm not engaging when they're doing negative behaviors, but I'm ramping up when they're doing something positive, I think it's very easy to be like, oh yeah, they're supposed to do that. Like, yeah, they're supposed to be doing their work. So, oh, I'm not going to bother them. I'm not going to do that. I'm just going to, you know, they're doing what, but I am so laser focused on what's going right. And I'm saying, what am I seeing right now in this moment that is going well? And what does it say about you as a person? So I'm also building up their like emotional vocabulary. So if they're hearing all throughout the day, oh my goodness, you look so focused right now, or the way that you did that, you are so patient. So they're hearing, huh, I'm focused. I am patient. And instead of hearing like, oh my God, sit down, go back to your seat. Stop doing that. Stop doing that. That's a narrative that is just in their head and they're hearing it all day. But if we're changing that narrative and adding to it, and that's kind of what our staff's goal is I'm focusing on what is going right, and that's how you're going to get my connection. So you can watch children really check themselves, and after a time, like, they're learning it. And granted, they're still impulsive, they're still hyperactive, we're still people, but they can start to be like, oh, Miss Kayla, and then they sit back down because they know I'm not going to respond and I'm not going to engage with them, but that's a moment I can praise them. Oh, I saw the way that you were able to self-regulate, you sat back down, and I could tell you're learning the rules. What do you need from me? And that's very different than, why are you always calling out? Why do you not listen to me? Like, it's not about that. So it's really like flipping, and it's the only thing you can do is, as the adult, you have to change the way that you look at behaviors. So it's singularly, if you're doing it or not doing it, it's just you. And it's hard. You know, I'm constantly checking myself. I've been doing this, you know, for years, so it's always on my brain. I think it just changes the way you just talk to people in general. It can change your mood. If I'm not so focused on what's going wrong, I'm a little bit less miserable. You know, you're not as angry. You're not as grumpy. You know, every day we teach the kid, every day's a new day. So, yep, yesterday was rough, but there's no shame. There's nothing attached to it. Today is a new day, and really just working on that. So I would say, like, in a nutshell, there's obviously a lot more that goes into it, but in a nutshell, that. So all of our staff are trained in Nurtured Heart. Our behavior modification system is based off of Nurtured Heart. And really just continuing to provide materials and coaching. And, you know, we offer group observations. So as, you know, our certified trainers, we do group observations, giving constant feedback. We have reminders on the outside of every timeout room. It's just kind of like woven in through our culture. So we've definitely seen a shift. We've seen a decrease in therapeutic holds, a decrease in the need for therapeutic holds. And that was our end goal, was to decrease the need for that.
Well, I've always operated under the belief that if you want to change somebody else's behavior, you have to start with yourself and change yours. Because it could be just the way that we're reacting to a situation, you know, as behavior analysts, what we are or are not reinforcing. But really it's that shift, because how many times you walk into a classroom or a home or wherever, and it's everything you shouldn't be doing and nothing about what you should be doing, or what is going right is better way to put it, what's going right. So if we change our behavior, that's what really can change.
Well, and a big, like, visual, which I really enjoy, is, like, if you have, like, a white square with a purple dot in the middle, and it's a teeny tiny purple dot, and people say, what do you say? Oh, I see a purple dot. But why do you see the purple dot when 99% of it is a white square?
Right.
So you're looking at one thing, and you're not focused on everything else. And I feel like that's just, like, a very quick understanding of Nurtured Heart, is there's 99% of the things going right, and you're only focused on the one thing that's going wrong. And you're just kind of shutting yourself off to opportunity, and then you're exhausted, and then you keep being exhausted, and then you're burnt out. And then that's, you know, a sin in itself, because that's good people getting burnt out who are here for the right reasons. But when you can kind of change your focus and mentality, it's like super helpful.
That's awesome. How do you help parents change the way that they think? Because they have been a parent in a certain way for so long. Like, how do you even begin to approach that with them? Do you provide them with, like, resources to do it? Are you teaching them? Is it a combination of a variety of things?
Yeah, so we work on, obviously, I feel like a lot of my, like, parent work that I'm doing is through a Nurtured Heart lens, because I feel like we're also educating on, like, what is your child doing each day? Yeah. Why is it they're like, oh, well, they come home and they're actually, like, in a good mood. Like, they're a little bit different. So it's like, all right, and you just have to are you willing to learn? Are you willing to, you know, be open to something new? Because if they're like, no, and it's like, okay, well, I'm not going to change that. But really figuring out, like, who's open to what, and just meeting every parent where they're at. Because if I'm working with a parent who's dealing with food insecurity and housing, I can't focus on, I can't focus on, oh, the way that you're going to do a reward system at home. I'm here to help you. Okay, I got to work on these stressors that you've got. And here, let's put our head together. Let's work on the Camden Housing Authority. Let's figure out what food banks are available, what access of supports I can get. Because maybe we can stabilize that. And then I can start work. You've got that built in. You got that trust. Like, hey, I'm here to help. I'm not, you know, I feel like sometimes people who work with children, they're like, oh, you're going to take my kids away. You're Dyfus. You're this. And it's like, no, I'm just here to help in whatever way you need at this moment. And like just figuring out each session is kind of going in with that mentality. And then it can build up of like, you know what, I actually see like that could be helpful. Like, can you tell me a little bit more about that? And like leading them back to me. You can't force it anything because they're not, if you're not open to it, you're not going to be willing to learn or listen. So really just kind of being there and showing them like, here, I'm only here to help. I'm not here to do anything that's harmful. You're here because you care about your kid. And that's it. You wouldn't sign up for this program if you did not care about your child. And I care about your child too, even though I don't know them that well. But they're here, and that means I care about them. So it's like working on figuring that out together. Sometimes they're easier than others, but we all get there.
It sounds like you really develop a partnership with them in this process, as opposed to more of like that dictatorial style that really tends to not work too well if you're trying to dictate what they should or shouldn't be doing.
No, because they're also, I can't follow them home either. Right. So you're going to, okay, I might say it, but if you're not going to do it, then we've just kind of both wasted our time.
Yeah.
And so we're not in that.
How can ABA providers help to support that process?
I feel like for that question, I'm not really sure the answer to that. I feel like I'd have to educate myself a little bit more. I know that's something that, in theory, Virtua and the CASEL program is always working. And sometimes things can take a very long time. But like figuring out, like, is there a space for us to learn more or have in-house? That has been things that we've seen such a need for our patients who are on the spectrum, because we do accept children on the spectrum, because a lot of it is educating a parent of like, okay, we're seeing something interesting that your three-year-old is doing XYZ behavior. Mom, have you ever heard of autism? They're like, no, I don't know what that is. And then so it's a lot of resources, coaching, education, crying. Your child's healthy. There's nothing wrong with them. It's just I've got to teach you how to better relate to your kid. So I think having like accessibility and just being able to like knowing more about that referral process. We are working with primarily Medicaid. So I think that's maybe, I think that's the part where I'm saying I need to educate myself a little bit more on like Medicaid and private insurance for like interactive kids. So we've got a couple resources here, but I think Medicaid can be a big barrier to services here. And that's why people feel so fortunate that there is a Medicaid program who is able to do this that is not going to financially getting mental health service, but then I'm paying a $500 deductible, or I'm doing this, or I'm having each copay every time. I feel like, I don't know if I answered that question.
You did. That's very good. So our last question, what's something that you would really like listeners to take away from this experience, from your journey?
The journey at CASEL, or your journey. Like this journey here?
Never a journey you need.
Who am I to tell about a journey? Let me see.
How about Caitlin's journey?
Right.
Caitlin's journey. I don't know. I feel like for me, I've always been very focused on, I knew that when I was in school, I was like, I didn't have a name for what I wanted to do. But I was very much, the only thing that I said I needed is I know I needed to be able to put my head down on a pillow and know that I like help somebody and know that I made a difference. And however I could accomplish that, that was the most important thing to me. Yeah, money's nice or this, like as long as I can make a living and, you know, be survived. But that I feel like is the most important to me. And I feel like that's the consistent thing that I see from the people that work here. And you can find a lot of value in that, I think, in your own personal journey of, you know, when you're walking around and, you know, people are just feeling miserable and not so happy and not so excited, but they've got everything else in the world, but they don't like what they do. We spend way too much time at work to not like we do and not really feel connected to it. So that's what I tell everybody. If the second for anything that I do that doesn't bring me joy or doesn't make me feel connected to like a bigger purpose or a mission, I was like, I'm out. I'm gone. And I think that's probably the best thing that I could offer to anybody, is to really reflect, and does your stuff serve you? And if it doesn't, Gotta go. Gotta go. If it's people, places, things, we got no time.
Right.
Well, now it's time for our favorite part of the day with Logan.
Okay, we're going to do some rapid-fire questions, and these are all about you, so it's fun.
Okay. You know what? I'm so good at... I'm so good at trivia. My recall is, like, amazing, but you put me on the spot for some things, and it's just a blank slate. So, like, let me see if I can.
These are not that hard.
Okay, they're not trivia. They're personal trivia.
The most difficult one is the first question, which is?
Which is a four-letter word that starts with a C.
Oh, my God. Call.
Call. Favorite store.
Aldi. Ooh. I'm a super fan. The grocery store.
A tool you never leave home without.
A tool? I have like a pen that has a screwdriver in it, and it just is in my bag at all times. I've never used it. I hope I never need it, but it's there. Okay. That's a tool.
It's there. Would you rather stay in or go out?
I would stay in. Okay. My goodness. I'm too cheap. I'm not going anywhere.
Your go-to lazy dinner?
Pizza from the freezer that I've frozen because I save it all.
Yes. Your favorite hobby?
I love to read. I love trashy TV. Very trashy TV.
Like The Bachelor, Bachelorette.
Yeah, that's one. And
that's
then,
our parents.
That's one. Mostly all like the Netflix dating shows, but competition reality, Survivor, mm-hmm. Big Brother. Oh, that's all day.
Guilty pleasure.
All of it. I'm not even guilty. I'm not guilty. I just love it.
How about Below Deck?
I am not. I don't think I do Bravo.
Okay, because that's like a thing at our work. Different people watching that. I do not.
Yes.
I watched one episode. I couldn't even make it to the end.
No, I haven't done the Bravo. I feel like I'm more of like an MTV, ABC, because I love The Challenge, but I love Survivor, love Big Brother. Cool. Like those, I just recently watched Traitors. That's like a newer, it's like an English show. So, but it's all about, you have to survive, and it's like a murder mystery almost.
Oh,
so it's like they have three traitors, but no one knows who the traitors are, and they have to sabotage missions. And then you vote people out who you think are the traitors. So it's a lot of mind games. Oh, I love a mind game. Yeah. The Mole.
I was going to say The Mole. My husband.
Yeah, I just watched the new Mole. I did get it right. For that one. So I love stuff like that.
We watched the old ones when Anderson Cooper used to do it. They were so good.
Yeah, I watched the reboot for this one.
Hmm.
New TV show for you to watch.
Yeah, I'm like, at least my list. Your favorite rainy day activity?
Probably sitting on the couch and watching TV.
And your life motto?
What is it? Oh, I like the one, if it comes, let it come. If it goes, let it go. If it stays, let it stay. Okay, I don't have any time.
Yeah, no, I love
those. If it goes, let it go.
Yeah, right.
It's a good one.
Yeah.
This place is like a walking motto. Mm-hmm. It is just everywhere. There's little phrases and whatever you need that day, it's somewhere and you can access it. I love that.
Yeah.
It's on the floor. It's on the walls. Yeah. It's in people's mouths. It's great.
Because every day you might not even know what you need until you're like, oh, maybe that was it today.
Mm-hmm. Right. Yeah, that was helpful.
We do a lot of, what was it? Random Acts of Kindness Day was February 28th, I think. And then so I put in everyone's mailbox, like, it was like a kindness challenge, and it's like a bingo. Uh-huh. And then for people to do, it was like kindness at work. So it's like, hey, who knows? And it was like walking around. And half the time, some people might be like, I don't want to do this. Or like, what's this? Who put this? And they're always like, it's Caitlin. Yep, Caitlin put it in your mailbox. But yeah, I saw people walking around. They were like crossing it out and Xing. And I'm like, even if you just did one of them, then it's a win. If one person did one, I'm good with it.
Then it was worth it, right?
Yeah, it was worth it.
Even if one person, noticed it or did something with it. Yep.
Right. Yeah, but that kind of effort and continued putting into, like, everyone being here for that right reason, feeling supported and feeling, connected to what we do here, or coming into work and like, yeah, we got to be nice. You got to be welcoming, or you have to see those, like, messages on the floor. Because, it's a job, but it's, I don't know, it's more than that.
Right, like, you're changing people's lives here.
That's the goal.
Yeah, right.
Well, thank you so much. We really have enjoyed speaking with you and hearing more about the program here at Castle. So.
Yes, thanks for having me. I know it took a while, but
we got it. Done.
Thanks for listening. Looking for more?
Be sure to follow us on your favorite podcast app and Instagram at The Interactive Journey.
Questions, comments, or want to be a guest on our show? We'd love to hear from you. You can message us at podcast@interactivekids.com or on Instagram at The Interactive Journey.